and welcome to the Innovation Forum podcast for Friday, 15th of May, with me, Ian Welsh. I hope you and yours are all well. A few days ago, I caught up with Rennie Hens, Global Marketing and Channel Development Director at DuPont Biomaterials. We talked about some of the challenges for the apparel sector in developing real circular economy models and the role of designers and fabric manufacturers in achieving this. That's all to come. First up is a brief roundup of some sustainable business news. The pandemic is clearly having a widespread impact across all business sectors. But with commodities researchers at Goldman Sachs in the US highlight livestock markets alongside oil as particularly vulnerable. Farmers are, Goldman Sachs says, facing a profound market imbalance as the COVID-19 epidemic has impacted the food industry. Restrictions on the hospitality sector, closing restaurants and other outlets, combined with schools and places of work closing their doors, has turned usual demand and supply patterns on their head. There are also reports of widespread coronavirus outbreaks in US meat processing plants, adding to the supply side problems. American food banks are, at the same time, reporting shortages. Feeding America, the largest food bank in the US, has warned that 18 million children could become what it calls food insecure across the world's biggest economy, according to CNBC. A new report in Journal Science highlights how microplastics spread throughout the world's oceans, creating pollution hotspots in the process. While some microplastics float on the surface, most particles attract algae and mineral deposits, causing them to sink to the ocean floor. At this point, the material is picked up by ocean currents, eventually being deposited in areas of high sediment, creating microplastic hotspots. At some locations in the Mediterranean, scientists found places where they had counted up to 1.9 million pieces of plastic per square metre, the highest ever recorded. Significant are the relative numbers of plastic fibres, as these are the most easily consumed and absorbed into organisms' flesh. Microfibers principally come from wastewater outflows, as the majority of treatment plants do not yet filter out the microfibers produced when washing garments and cleaning fabrics such as polyester. The same currents that move the particles also cause nutrients to accumulate, meaning that the plastics end up in areas rich in biodiversity, typically then entering food chains at the lowest levels. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization has concluded that the planet's total forest area is decreasing more slowly than in the past. However, this seemingly good news is tempered with the caveat that critical South American and African forests are still being rapidly cleared, with this being offset by progress in Asia. And, according to Global Forest Watch, there remains a clear trend towards primary forest clearance in the tropics. Globally, 7.8 million hectares per year were lost from 1990 to 2000, 5.2 million per year from 2000 to 2010, and 4.7 million per year from 2010 to 2020. Under the UN Sustainable Development Goals, of course, deforestation was to have been eliminated by 2020. Following the EU's labelling of biofuel from palm oil as sustainable in 2019, Italian oil giant Eni says it will stop using palm oil by 2023 as part of its overall decarbonisation strategy. The EU's Renewable Energy Directive calls for use of palm oil to be reduced to zero by 2030, so Eni's move is significantly ahead of what's required. Two-thirds of palm oil imported into the EU is currently used for energy purposes. Palm oil businesses argue, of course, that sustainably produced palm oil is a viable alternative to traditional fossil fuels. Finally, as economies emerge from the pandemic, many markets are going to face a labour crisis. A recent Stephanomics podcast presented by Bloomberg economist Stephanie Flanders highlights how many big economies rely on huge numbers of cheap migrant labour. The pandemic has meant that many workers have returned home or have been stranded in host countries without any economic support, and now at risk to coronavirus infection. Flanders and her correspondents argue that employers may well no longer be able to rely on low-paid workers and poor accommodation. New business models required. Coming up later this month is the start of our online Future of Food events series. Please join us on the 27th and 28th of May for our US-focused event. Among the 60-plus speakers and panellists will be the key people from Cargill, Kellogg, General Mills, Danone and Walmart. As a bit of a preview, published online now is a recording of a webinar from earlier this week with Cargill, the Yield Lab and Texas Tech. We talked about how innovation can really help agribusiness cut greenhouse gas and other impacts. And then on the 2nd and 3rd of June will be our Europe-focused event. Among those sharing insight will be experts from Unilever, Nestle, Danone, Barry Callebo, Innocent Drinks and Mars Wrigley. Our rescheduled Ethical Trade and Human Rights Conference, originally to have been held in London in March, will now be online on the 23rd and 24th of June. Among the confirmed speakers are business experts from L'Oreal, Mondelez International, AB InBev, Samsung, Fairtrade and Freshfields. And you can save £100 in tickets if you register before close on Friday 22nd of May. Following Innovation Forum's Sustainable Apparel and Textiles online event a couple of weeks ago, I spoke with Vinnie Hens, Global Marketing and Channel Development Director at DuPont Biomaterials. We talked about the fundamental things required to help shift the apparel sector towards effective circular economy models. We're going to talk particularly about circular economy models developing in the apparel sector. What do you see as the principal challenges for the apparel sector in developing real circular economy models?
There are a number of challenges here. So I start out by saying that the desire is there, and that is really encouraging. And certainly over the past 3 to 5 years, there's been much more of an understanding of what this is, and it has become a lot more developed in terms of the dialogue that people are having. So there's good news with that. Some of the challenges that we see from a material perspective are, if you're thinking about whether something is either taking it at the beginning of life bio-based, there are very few things that are out there at the moment that are truly have a bio-based or a partially bio-based component to them that also meet both the performance characteristics that an apparel brand is looking for and then can do it with some level of affordability. So those are challenges. And then when you look at from an end of life, a lot of the materials that are made out there, so things like spandex for stretch, the challenge there at an end of life is that it's not recyclable. And we know that recycling is such a big part of the sustainability story for a lot of our brands. When you incorporate a material like spandex in there, you immediately have rendered that garment unrecyclable. There's just challenges along the different parts of the chain, but people are starting to realize what they are and look at different ways to work around it.
How are DuPont then addressing these specifically?
There's a number of different technologies and platforms across DuPont Biomaterials. One that I work very specifically and closely with is our partially bio-based polymer, which is called, the brand name is Sorona. And that polymer gets made into fibers and then fabrics and, of course, makes its way into garments. So at the beginning of life, as I said, it is partially bio-based. 37% of it is plant-based. Then it is something that within our business, the only materials that we will launch from an R&D perspective are those that actually are higher performing than what they are replacing. And so that's just really been an important part of what we do, because we think that just being bio-based isn't enough. And frankly, you don't get paid for being just bio-based. So there has to be that performance factor. So when it comes to this particular Sorona and Sorona fibers, it does have higher performance and in areas such as stretch and stretch recovery. So we're using it a lot, or brands are using it a lot, as a replacement for spandex in stretch because it lasts longer, it doesn't wear out. So there's a principle of the circular economy there. And then at the end of life, it's fully recyclable, just like a normal PET, polyester. So you don't have the recycling challenges that you do with some of the elastane fibers.
What do your customers want? And are they engaging more in circularity now? And how do they link that with consumer demand?
There is a range of customers out there. I think some of it is, where are they on the spectrum of sustainability within their own organizations? If they are quite a ways along and they're pretty sophisticated, then their team, their designers, their innovation folks, they understand circular economy and they are asking that. There's certainly some brands that are on their early journey in sustainability, and so they are either looking at it purely as a recycling play, or they say, we need something that's bio-based, but they're not necessarily drawing that whole entire cycle together. So, again, we can work with people on all ends of the spectrum and work with them wherever they are in that journey. I really think a lot of that is being driven by what the brands are promoting and telling their consumers in terms of sustainability. So if a brand really believes strongly in only using recycled materials and they're promoting that out to their customers, that's what the customer sees. On the other hand, there are customers who say, I only want natural, or I only want something that's bio-based. And again, some of that's getting fed by the brands. The customers just say, I want something that's more sustainable. I want something that's more environmentally friendly. They don't necessarily understand what that means in terms of the textiles.
It does feel there's a lack of understanding around circular economies on behalf of the consumers at the moment. How do you see the role of designers then in developing these circular economy models?
I think designers need to and are starting to ask the question about what is the material that I'm using? How is that material going to work in terms of its longevity, durability, and what are its end of life type of uses? It's not good enough just to be quote unquote bio-based anymore, which is great. You know, just because something's bio-based doesn't mean it has a great durability. It doesn't mean that it has a great end of life story. Designers are asking the right questions. They're getting more sophisticated in their ability to understand the concepts.
And where do you stand on the style versus recyclability debate? We ran a poll during the event last week, which actually was prompted by a debate that happened at the event last year in Amsterdam. And that was, we asked the audience, what do you think in terms of, should designers not design something that is unrecyclable? Is it unacceptable to have a that is unrecyclable? And the clear response was, well, no, sometimes style will have to trump recyclability. Where do you stand on that?
Recycling in and of itself is an interesting discussion because just because something can be recycled doesn't mean it is getting recycled, right? If something can be recycled, but people aren't going to buy it and it's just going to sit on the shelves, that's no good for us. There are challenges with recycling. There are challenges with the supply, the way the supply chain is set up for recycling now. So again, the intentions are there, but just because something is recyclable doesn't mean that it's happening. Ultimately, in an ideal world, where I land on that is I think we should strive for that. Designers are looking for components that can be fully recyclable. We just did a concept jacket, actually a ski jacket, that we showed at some of the winter shows this year, that with the exception of the accessories, with the exception of the buttons and zippers, every part of that was made out of components that were fully recyclable. Recyclable and stretchable, the outer part of the jacket, the insulation, the inner part of the jacket. So it can happen. It's just people have to be a little bit more creative about sourcing.
And I guess it's also there's degrees, aren't there? Because you could have some garments, as you say, that can be entirely recyclable. Every aspect of them can be recycled. But then you have other things which perhaps can be upcycled or reused in a different way. So I guess it's thinking about all these different models that really is the way forward. How ultimately do you think that the apparel sector will be able to develop proper closed loops?
More and more, the brands and designers and innovation teams need to request and push on those of us who are in the materials segment to develop things that meet the definition of closed loop. Again, bio-based or durability, recyclable. So the need needs to be there. People need to adopt those materials that check those boxes in order for further developments to continue. So we have to see, from a material supplier standpoint, we have to see the desire. People have to push on us to do that in order for us to understand it and capture the economic value in doing that.
Is there a role for regulation in sort of nudging the sector in the right direction?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Some of the challenges that we face in sustainability in general are that many times the incumbent is a petro-based incumbent and it is much less expensive. Faced with some of the economic challenges of the past and certainly now, until and unless regulations come down that push us, that make petro-based materials more expensive, we are going to face some challenges in terms of the economics and the price gap.
Of course, right now, coming through the coronavirus pandemic crisis, petrol prices have never been lower. So I guess it's going to be a situation of having to ensure that the economic bounce, which comes out the other side of this, isn't entirely driven by an oil-based economy.
Well, exactly. And again, that has always been one of the reasons why we think it's really important to make sure that there's a significant performance aspect to any of the materials that we have, that they're not just bio-based. And also, you have to have the capability to be able to produce those materials at scale, which helps to drive your cost down.
Well, it's certainly going to be a very interesting year in many sectors, but not least the apparel sector. And it'll be interesting to see what we're talking about this time next year. But for now, Rennie Hens from DuPont, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ian.
DuPont was the lead sponsor of Innovation Forum's Sustainable Apparel and Textiles Conference. As ever, there's plenty more insight and analysis available on the website, including the usual podcasts and interviews. Look out for an op-ed about the latest business benchmark on farm animal welfare, just published this week. And don't forget to sign up by the 22nd of May, save £100 on tickets for Innovation Forum's Ethical Trade and Human Rights Conference on 23rd and 24th June. But that's all for now. I've been Ian Welsh, and I'll be back next week.